the table. What kind of answer for having the result will be that the analysis is bounded. I could say that almost nothing most of what I'm going to say is not really new. I mean, the ideas, none of the ideas are new. But what I've done is maybe just generalize a little bit and package things in a nice way. So, okay, and if there's time at the end, maybe I'll mention some applications to a function field analogs of Merrill's theorem on uniform boundedness of torsion on elliptic curves. Okay, so let me begin with the definition of finality. So this is something that makes sense for any curve over any field. So K will be my field, and X will be the curve. So, and my curves will always be the nicest kind possible, so smooth, projective, and geometrically irreducible. Okay, and so, okay, I'll let G be the genus of the curve. So then I'll define an invariant gamma of X, and if I want to indicate the dependence on K, I might also write it as gamma sub K of X. So this will be the minimum of the degrees of all possible maps from X to P1 over K. So where this isn't, well, all non-constant maps. Okay, so this is gonna be, there's always gonna be some positive integer. And this is what's called the gonality. So this is the gonality, or the K-gonality of X. So, for example, maybe the simplest non-trivial example is let's suppose that K is algebraically closed, and the genus is at least 2, then if you want to say the gonality is 2, that's equivalent, that's just the same as saying that X is hyperlithic. So you can view higher curves of higher gonality as being sort of more complicated versions of hyperlithic. So, for example, I think the origin of the word is that curves of gonality 3 are called trigonal, and then, yeah, so you can generalize from there. Okay, so let me now give some properties of this notion. So some of them are kind of obvious, and some of them are not so obvious. So first of all, what happens if you enlarge the ground field? So if you have a finite extension, and you consider the same curve, so you have a curve over K, and you want to relate the gonality K and the gonality over L, there's an obvious relation. Because if you increase the ground field, that'll just give you more possible maps, and so the minimum could go down. So this gonality will be less than or equal to that one. And in fact, also, if it happens that your ground field is already algebraically closed, and then you make some field extension of that, then the gonality can't go down any further. So okay, that's also easy to show. Specialization arguments. Okay, so the next thing is that you can bound, there's a bound for the, at least when G is at least 2, you can bound the gonality in terms of the genus. And this you can prove by taking two different canonical divisors on X and observing that their difference is the divisor of some rational function. And that rational function will have degree at most that. And maybe I should mention also, this bound is actually sharp for every g, in the sense that if you give me a g, there I can find a curve, a field and a curve, such that the Gödel is actually equal to 2g minus 2. That comes from the fact that I'm sort of on the general curve over the general field, of the general curve of genus g, the only divisors on x are, the only line bundles are the powers of the canonical bundle. So if K is algebraically closed, then you can get better upper bounds. So then you can prove that the Gödel is bounded by essentially by this. And this is much harder to prove. This is a consequence of real Noether's theory. So, and again, if this bound is sharp, in the sense that if you take a general curve genus G, then that will be the Gödel. Okay, the last property I want to mention is what happens if you have a map from one curve to another, then how are the Gödel's? Can you bound one of the Gödel's and some of the other? Oh, sorry. Okay. And the result in their state, it might be true for all fields, but I'll say it for infinite fields. So if you have a morphism, then, I mean, you should think that that means that X is more complicated than Y is. So at least you know that the genus of X will be at least the genus of Y. And what you can prove also under this hypothesis is that the Gödel also is so it's a pretty simple argument, but the argument I know doesn't work when K is finite. In fact, so as far as I know, it's an open question to determine whether this holds for when K is finite. Okay. All right, so. Now let me move on to modular curves. Is there a question or a comment?
Pi non-constant or something?
Oh, yeah, okay. So. Yeah, non-constant. Yeah, otherwise you can't say anything. Okay. All right, so let me fix an algebraically closed field. And I'll look at various kinds of curves. So let me start with some classical modular curves. In fact, I'll start by talking about x of n. So let me also suppose for now that the characteristic that n is an integer and the characteristic doesn't divide n. And let me fix primitive n for divinity. So then, x of n is going to be a curve over k. If k are the complex numbers, I could describe ordered out by some subgroup of SL2z. But for my purposes, the moduli interpretation will be more useful. So what you can say is it has the property of such that its k points are approximately the same as, so this curve essentially parameterizes elliptic curves with some extra structure, and the extra structure is so a basis for the n torsion of E, say over the, so the, okay, they should be
And then, but such that they have a particular value of the bait herring. And if you don't put this condition about the bait herring, if you forget to put that, then what you would get would be something that breaks up into components according to the different values of the bait herring. So this is just so you could get a connected term. Okay, so now, so that's one kind of curve, and you can also take, well, I'll mention later, you can take quotients of these curves and get the other classical modular curves. Mm-hmm. The next kind of curve I want to talk about are inclusive curves. Okay, so these exist only in characteristic T. So let me now suppose that characteristic K is T. And I'll take Q to be a power of T. And I'll look at the inclusive curve of level Q. So this, I'll denote it big of Q. So it's a curve that can be defined over FP. And it's characterized by a similar description. Oh, maybe I should explain what this approximately means. I mean, there's sort of two problems here. One problem is that the sum of the points in here actually correspond to degenerate Lipkin curves, correspond to gain variant infinities. And the other problem is that when n is really small, then it's not quite true. Because it's some problems about being a torus moduli space, not a fine moduli space, and if capital N is too small. Okay, and there's similar problems here. But this parameterizes a different problem. So this parameterizes pairs E and R, where again E is an elliptic curve. And now R, instead of being a Q torsion point, it's something that's in the kernel of the Fréchet-Bohm map. So the Fréchet-Bohm map is an isogeny. It's the dual of the Frobenius isogeny. So the Frobenius would go. So this thing here. This is Fréchet-Bohm. So the Frobenius morphism, the Q power Frobenius morphism, goes from E to the elliptic curve, whose coefficients are the Q powers of the original elliptic curve, and the Fréchet-Bohm is the dual one, so it goes in the other direction. And so the this is what this curve parameterizes. And okay, and you can also put these things together and get other. So maybe what I'll call hybrid curves.
Well, aren't they a generator of the curve?
Oh yeah, sorry. Actually, I should say you're right. Sorry. So R. Yeah. So R generates. Yeah, otherwise I'd get it. Otherwise, again, I'd get a disjoint union according to order. Okay, so you can also get some hybrid curves that parameterize elliptic curves with both kinds of level structure. So maybe I can just describe them by drawing a diagram. So here at the bottom you have this, which is the J, just the J line. It's P1. It's P1. And above it, in one direction, you have these classical modular curves for P not dividing N. And on the other hand, and so this direction, you have these inclusive curves. And above these, You'll have things like, well, I'll just invent some notation. I don't know if there's any standard notation for this, but you can have this that classifies eating better with the basis of the mentor and also a generator for the kernel for sheep. It's not quite okay. And this you can also describe what these are actually Galois coverings. These generically Galois, and you can say what the automorphism group of this covering is. And this one is going to be SL2. This corresponds to change in the bases, but you have to modulate, you have to quotient by the plus or minus one because it comes from the fact that the generic elliptic curve has a non-trivial automorphism group. And so you have a similar thing here. This group here would be sigma e to the n z. Our modulo plus or minus one. And this one, This one is going to be it's the product of 4U. You have to take the product of 4U. You can see this one's not quite the composite in the sense of function fields. This one is a little bit, but anyway, it's pretty close. And these things make a tower. If you have an n dividing n prime, then you get n prime. You get this above this. I'm assuming you choose a compatible system of roots of unity in order to do this. And similarly here, that you have this one is dominated by. An obvious to get a whole tower. And so you can now, if I want to talk about other curves, I can classify other curves by open subgroups of a certain profinite group. Namely, just by Galois theory, for any subgroup of this group, I'll get some intermediate function field, and hence an intermediate curve. And if I want to take the whole tower and take the quotients of any of these modular curves, then I can just as in Galois theory, you can take an inverse limit and take inverse limit over all possible capital N and little n of some group. I mean, you could write out in terms of ZP star and SLN something. Yeah, SL2 or something if you want to. So anyways, this is some profinite group. And now, and as I was saying, if you have any open subgroup, so an open subgroup of S corresponds to a subgroup of one of these finite groups, and then given that subgroup of this finite group, you can take the corresponding quotient and the thing that corresponds under Galois theory. So we get a modular curve. So this is what I'll consider to be the general hybrid curve of just known X sub G. Okay, so this is a quotient. Some x and n. Okay, so those are all the modular curves I'm going to consider. And now let me state some of the theorems about finality. So I want to now say something about the finality of these curves. So first, let me start with a characteristic zero theorem. And this is a theorem of Abramovich. So it says that if you look at one of these curves, so over the complex numbers. Yeah, so now, okay, maybe I should say, I mean, of course, you only have this part when the characters take the feet. Otherwise, you just ignore this. You just take the these. So for any modular curve over the complex numbers, maybe I should say one other thing before I state this theorem. If you want to get lower bounds of the generality, it becomes just a harder problem if you make your field algebraic closed. Since I said at the beginning, if you increase your field, the generality only goes down. So if you want the best possible, the strongest possible lower bound theorem, you might as well work over algebraic closed field. And also, if you increase from one algebraic closed field to another, then the generality doesn't change. That's also something I mentioned at the beginning. If your field is already algebraic closed, the generality never changes beyond that point. So it suffices to consider all these curves over, say, your favorite characteristic 0 algebraic closed field and your favorite characteristic p algebraic closed field. So those are the only fields I'm going to consider now. And my favorite characteristic 0 algebraic closed field is complex numbers. So what you prove is that the generality is bounded by 7 over 800 times the index of the group. So the index you can also interpret as being so in here you maybe have an X of G somewhere in here dominated by one of these. And this index, the degree of this map down here is going to be the index of G and S. So this is bounding the generality in terms of the degree of this map. And you can also relate this to the genus. So you can also prove that maybe this should be a different color since it wasn't. I mean, this part of it came was lot before around it. So you can show this is at least 21 over 20. And this is really best possible, except for this, maybe this constant is not the right one. But it's best possible because I showed at the beginning that any curve of genus G, at least 2, has generality bounded by 2g minus 2. So this is a lower bound of the same type, except the constant's different. I'm not gonna explain this proof. It's actually, it's a very analytic proof, let me just say that. I mean, the main ingredients are there's a theory of conformal area defined by some some differential geometers, Li and Yao. And that's sort of the hardest part of this. And it's somehow saying that somehow this thing has such a big volume compared to conformal area compared to the area of P1 that it can't have any low degree maps to P1. And so use that, and also uses a weak version of the Selberg conjecture on eigenvalues of the non-Euclidean Laplacian. So I mean, it's conjectured that the least positive eigenvalue of the Laplacian acting on the hyperbolic plane should be at least a quarter, and that's not proved yet. But there's some weakenings of that. It's known to be at least I guess it's 0.21. So, and that's where this number comes in. So you'd actually get to improve this to like 1 over 96 if you actually prove the Selberg conjecture. But anyway. Yeah, so that's, okay, so that's the, so this is sort of a satisfactory answer to the whole, to the question of about getting lower bounds and generality or modular, for at least in the characteristic 0 case. So, let's see, so let's, So now let me say what. So what I want to talk about though is what happens in the characteristic P. Obviously the proof is not going to carry over. Well, at least I don't know how to. Unless you can figure out some characteristic P analog of conformal area and the characteristic P analog of a non-Euclidean Laplacian. I don't know. Doesn't seem very. I don't know. Okay, so here's the characteristic P theorem. so in the form I'm going to say works. This is a fixed P. So this P is me, and this P is the time. So as G runs through, so I'm not even going to give an explicit lower bound because it's so embarrassingly weak that I'm not going to actually state it. But I'll at least say this, that as G runs through distinct open subgroups, so I mean there are countably many open subgroups of S because they all correspond to subgroups of one of these finite groups. So as you can list them all, and you can list them in any order. So and as G runs through such subgroups, so open subgroups of S. The Gaudenality over my favorite algebraically closed field of characteristic P, which is FP bar, tends to at least goes to infinity. So at least it's growing. Okay, so now I want to explain how you prove something like this. And as I said at the beginning, the main ideas in the proof are not really mine. So I want to explain where they come from. So the first result of this type was due to Andrew Ogg in 1974. So what he proved, he was considering the case of hyperelliptic modular curves. So he was looking at the set of n's for which a particular modular curve x naught of n is hyperelliptic. And so he proved, and what he showed is that they're, well, as you guess would be true from this more general theorem, that this is a finite set. And not only did he prove it was finite, but he actually found them all. So he found the explicit list of n's.
What characteristic?
Oh, this is in. He was mostly interested in characteristic zero, but his method proved it first in characteristic p. So I guess it's really much all characteristics of maybe prime to n. So found all. Okay, so there's some particular list, and what's interesting for me is the strategy he used to prove this. So well, it's interesting for me because I just want to copy what he did.
So FP varies just about change, just about going infinity.
This for this theorem?
Yeah.
I think this one is actually. I should check. I haven't actually looked at the paper recently, but I think this one is actually uniform in P. Actually, wait a second. Okay. I shouldn't say. I can't remember. But now I'm a little bit worried about whether that's actually true. I think it depends on P. Okay. I mean, there's no reason to. It's not necessarily true that if you take a curve in characteristic zero and you reduce it to P, it might not have the same. There's no reason to expect that it'll have the same Gaudenality. So that's a good question. I think he was mostly interested in the characteristic zero case. So he was using. So in that case, that's where he gave the complete list.
So when you say your G runs through the distinct level kind of subgroup, the index going to infinity.
That turns out to be true because this group, this S, there are only finitely many open subgroups of each index. You can prove that. In fact, this S is it's topologically finitely generated. It means that there's a finitely generated dense subgroup here. and that using that, that follows from that, that they're only finding the remaining subgroups of a given index. So that's a, that would be an equivalent way to state this, this theorem up here, that as the index goes to infinity, this tends to infinity. Or you could say if there's some function, some increasing function of the index, and I'm not telling you what it is, such that the gonality is greater than or equal to that function of the index. So unfortunately, it's not going to be, for me, it's not going to be a linear function. It's going to be something much weaker. Okay, any other comments or questions? Okay, so let me tell you what Og did. So his proof is based on two observations. So the first one is that X of n has many supersingular points. So a supersingular point means a point for which the corresponding elliptic curve that parameterizes is a supersingular elliptic curve. So, and all of them are defined, okay, so over FP bar, and, okay, and all of them are defined over FP square. So, I mean, you might be familiar with the fact that if you have a supersingular elliptic curve, P, it's J invariants in FP squared. But you can show you can show a little bit more that there's actually a model, the elliptic curve over FP squared, for which all the subgroups of order n are actually defined over FP squared. So that's how you that's what's behind this fact. And then there's just a general thing to say if you have any curve over a finite field and it has a ton of points. So if it has too many points, and it has more than d times as many points as p1 does, so where this is some finite field, this is some curve over fq, and d is some integer, then it's automatic that the gonality, at least the fq gonality of this curve, is at least d. So this is supposed to be an obvious fact, because if you had a we had a morphism of degree less than or equal to d, because all the rational points, well, I mean, they can't map more than d to 1 if it's a degree d map. So those are the things he used. So using this, he was able to prove fq, something about the fq gonality. And then for hyperelliptic curves, you can show that it's hyperelliptic. So is there a question or comment? Okay, so now, for us, though, this is not going to be enough because this only gives the FQ gonality. And what I said is that the gonality possibly could go down when you go over FQ bar. So, in fact, it could go way down. So this is not enough. So there's another ingredient needed for the proof of this characteristic P theorem. And this, so for this other ingredient, the other ingredient has nothing to do with modular curves. So these other ingredients, the idea sort of appears in many places, maybe not completely independently of each other. In varying degrees of generality. Okay, and the version I'm going to give, so generalizes what these people did. So the idea is that if you take any, if you have any curve over K, and you, I want to say, what I want to say is how much, I want to bound how much the gonality can go down when you go from FQ to FQ bar, or more generally from any field up to a separable closure. And what's true is that this So perhaps surprisingly, you can actually give a bound. I mean, the obvious direction is that this binality is less than or equal to the k binality. But you can actually give an inequality in the other direction. So it can be bounded below, from below, in terms of the binality. Over k. So in other words, there's some function tending to infinity such that this binality is at least as large as this function, as that function applied to this binality. Or another way to say it is that you can, right? Okay. This is not a period, this is part of a comma. So if, this actually is not true as I stated. The reason it's not true, well, let me give you a counterexample to this. Suppose you look and consider genus 1 curves over Q. You can find genus 1 curves over Q that don't have any dividers of low degree, of low positive degree. And if their order in the H1 in the H1KE is large, that will make the binality of that genus one curve large. On the other hand, if you base extend it to Q bar, it becomes an elliptic curve, and the binality drops down to 2, no matter how large it was to begin with. So that shows you this can't be true exactly as I've stated. And so what I need to say is I need to add one condition, is that the curve has a rational point. And then it's true. Okay, so this is the key lemma for going between FQ binality and FQ bar binality. And yeah, so maybe I should say this. Well, what goes into the proof for this is we've got a couple of things. There's a lemma of Castelnuovo, a geometric lemma of Castelnuovo and Severi that bounds the genus of a curve on a product of curves. And then there's also the other thing that gets used is Vey's theory of descent of the base field. So there's a criterion when you have a curve over a field extension, you want to know when it can be defined over a subfield. And there's some condition about, for example, it has to be isomorphic to its Galois conjugates, and then there's an extra co-cycle condition. So that gets used here.
Can you say something more precise? Because you just say in terms of gamma k, it could be 0 times gamma k.
No, he's saying something.
Are you saying it's greater than or equal to?
No, when I say bounded from below, I mean there's some function of this. There's some function tending to infinity.
Okay.
That, yeah. So
what kind of function?
Very precisely, another way to say it is that this can be bounded from above in terms of some function of this.
Okay.
Okay. So in other words, when you Okay, so let me now use these methods to actually explain the proof of this theorem in the general case.
So is the function like an exponential function?
Yeah, something like that. I can show you the proof later, and you'll see what it's pretty bad. Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm definitely not going to get anything as nice as the Abramovich's theorem. So I'll probably, at most, I'll get a lower bound that's something like log or log log of the index or something bad like that. I haven't actually worked out exactly what it is, but I think, yeah. I mean, actually, I don't know what the best possible function in this lemma is. I mean, it could be, maybe it's even a linear. Maybe there's some universal linear function. Like maybe this, I don't know, maybe this finality, is it always 1/10? This finality, is it always greater than or equal to 1/10 of that? I haven't really, I don't know, maybe you can construct some counterexample, I'm not sure. I haven't, that's another open question. Okay, so let's, I mean,
I guess if I were forced to guess, what I would think is true is that in this theorem, it would be the result would be just like the Abramovich theorem. This viscosity should be greater or equal to some universal constant times the index. And I think that constant shouldn't even depend on p. That's what I would guess, but I don't know. All right, so let's see. So here's, okay, so now let me give a sketch of the proof. Of this characteristic p theorem. Okay, so let me, I'll do it according to the type of curve. So first let me do it in the case of the classical modular curve S of G, so by which I mean a quotient of X of N. Okay, so by some subgroup of SL2N, this is my name, not the first one. So I'm going to be supposing now that P does not divide, I mean characteristic P, but P does not divide N. And, okay, so to prove this, I'll want to find some analog. For example, if I want to prove this for X of N, I'll want to have some analog of X of N. Well, it would be nice if N, we could say that X of N had all the supersingular points defined over FP squared. So if I had some statement like that, then it would be true. But if that won't be true, it turns out that's not true for the, at least for the standard definition of X of N. So I'm going to have to use some twisted version of X of N. So this twisted curve is also, I mean, I think it's well known. It's used for people, like for coding theorists who are trying to find curves with many rational points over finite fields. Then they need such things, and they use modular curves and Schumacher curves and things like that. So to do this, well, let me first define. I've set up a couple of things. So M is going to be this abelian group, and I'm going to make it into a Galois module, into a module for the Galois group of FP squared. So to describe this as a Galois module, I just have to tell you how the Frobenius acts. And the Frobenius, the P squared Frobenius. This is FP squared. So, and I'll let it act as multiplication by minus p. Okay, so that makes this into a Galois module. And now let me also fix an isomorphism I from the top exterior power of m to mu n, so as Galois modules. So in other words, it's like a pairing. It's like it's an alternating. You can think of this as being a non-degenerate alternating pairing from M cross M into mu n. It's supposed to be like the Bayes pairing. So and this is possible. This thing actually exists. I mean, a Galois isomorphism because when you square minus, you take the determinant of the matrix that's minus p, you get p squared, which is how Frobenius act from this side. So this thing actually exists. And now, given this, you can construct a twisted version of F X and N. I mean, the way you get a twisted version of X of N is by defining a moduli problem that's a twisted version of the moduli of the interpretation of moduli interpretation of X of N. So I'll call this one X of N prime. So, and this will be a curve over FP squared, and it'll be characterized by the fact that its points over a field K will be approximately this, it'll parameterize the following thing. B together with
where E is, as usual, is the curve over K, and this phi is an isomorphism. So it's an isomorphism from the N torsion of E to M. So it's an isomorphism of, okay, of Galois modules, of Galois modules over K. Such that, under which, well, this side you have the Bethe pairing, which is the alternating, and under this isomorphism, this the Bethe pairing is supposed to correspond to this pairing I. Okay, so that's, and okay, and as you can say, consider those up to isomorphism. So, okay, so the first thing I should say is that, so that this, you can show there's actually a curve that this actually defines a curve. And this curve, if you compare it to the regular, to the one I defined earlier, x of n, then you can show that these become isomorphic over the algebraic curve. Because what happens when you view this curve over an algebraically closed field, for example, if you take K to be algebraically closed, then there's no Galois module structure here. And so to give an isomorphism like this is just giving, is the same thing as just giving a basis of E of N. And this condition about the Bethe pairing corresponds is just saying that you have a basis where the Bethe pairing takes a particular value. So the moduli description becomes the same as the moduli description for the regular X. So that's why these are isomorphic there. But now, the reason that this one is that this twisted version is better is that I now have analogs of this of these things that I'll use. Actually, there are two things about this curve that are better. So, that are better than the original. So the first thing that's good about this curve is that all the automorphisms are defined over FP squared. Namely, if you have an element of SL2Z, of NZ, then they act on M. And this action on M induces an action on this curve, Xn prime. And this, and all these, and the point is that all these things are defined, all these automorphisms of X of N prime are defined over FP squared. And that means that you can, therefore, for any subgroup that means that you can get, you can also define a twisted version of X sub G for any G, for any X sub G that's a quotient of X of N. You could just define this to be the quotient of X of N prime. So this would be the quotient of X of N prime modulus some group. So, and this is again over FP squared. So that's one of the nice things about this model, this X of N prime. And the other nice thing, I should say also, this one, of course, is isomorphic to the regular X of G when you go up to the algebraic closure. And the other nice thing about this curve is that it does have the property that all the supersingular points are defined over FP squared. So the reason for this is just what I said earlier, is that every supersingular elliptic curve in characteristic P has a model over FP squared, for which the p squared Frobenius acts as minus p on the whole elliptic curve. So in particular, it'll act that way on all the torsion points in the elliptic curve. It'll act as minus multiplication by minus p. So that means that the En will look just like this module M for those elliptic curves. So those will correspond to points defined over fp squared. Okay, so now what can you say? So given this, okay, this tells you that also all the supersingular points on X sub G prime, those are just the images of, are also defined by FP squared. Since these are just going to be the images of the points, the supersingular points down to here. I have this quotient map to map from x of n down to this met curve. This curve is defined over f t squared. So that tells you that. That tells you that if we look at the number of points of this curve over f t squared, this is huge. Okay, maybe I should say, what does huge mean? Well, no, okay, maybe I'll say it the next line, what huge means. So, I mean, okay, so.
You said in the very beginning that x of n is, you should adjoin the nth rules of unity, right?
Yes.
And then when you go over fp, do you suppose that fp has the nth rules of unity, or?
Well, here, okay, I guess I only defined, the way I defined x of n, I only defined it before in that case where I had an nth rule of unity. So, but here I'm really only making a statement. Yeah, I guess I don't want to worry about what x of n means.
That's maybe another advantage of x of n prime, that you don't need the nth rules of unity.
Yeah, I mean, there are other versions of x of n that are actually definable even over fp, where instead of using this m, you take z mod nz cross mu n, and that's something you can define even without having a particular nth rule of unity. But, okay, yeah, but anyway, all I care about is that, yeah, I guess that's another advantage of this thing. I mean, this thing, well, at least, It is a model that's defined over f t squared, where this one, you have to do something to it. Yeah. So this is just a very particular model. By the way, these x of n primes, it's sort of a different curve in every characteristic. I mean, they don't all arise as reductions mod p of some particular twist of x of n in characteristic zero. They're somehow, these twists don't really exist in characteristic zero. They're just some funny characteristic p objects. Actually, I've always wondered whether somehow this argument of counting super singular points is somehow really is sort of the characteristic P analog of conformal area or something. Whether there's some sort of, I don't know, some theory of conformal area in characteristic P, except that what it means is somehow super singular points or something like this. But I don't really claim that I know anything about this. I'm just wondering. Because there are sort of elements of the proof, of this proof and of the Abramovich proof that look sort of similar. So it almost looks like they're the same kind of proof. If you only knew what the correct analogy was, then you could somehow do both at once. But, okay, I don't really know. Okay, anyway, once you know that this has so many points, then again, if this number of points is more than d times the number of points on P1 over that field, then you get that the canality is large. So from this you get that the fp squared canality of this curve is huge. And now huge means it's actually very good. It's actually a linear lower bound in the index, which is what you would expect to be true. The only thing that's bad about it is that the constant depends on p. But it's, and other than that, it's very good. So that's right. So this is what huge means at this stage. And now, using that, now I can apply this lemma. Well, I guess I've erased it, but the lemma that compares fp squared canality to fp bar canality, and say if this, so I apply the lemma now, and this tells you that the fp bar canality of this curve, well, it's not huge anymore, but at least it's big. So that's because I don't know, because I don't have, it's not, because it, you lose something when you pass, I don't know, but, okay. So big just means that it goes to infinity in terms of the function of the index. So, and now this is the same thing as, now over fp bar, so that now I'm working over fp bar, this is now the same curve as what I defined through x and g before. So that proves the characteristic P theorem, at least for these classical curves. Okay, so I'm almost out of time. So maybe I'll just say a little bit about what's different for Ragusa curves. It turns out for Ragusa curves, So for Ragusa curves, this argument doesn't work.
it turns out that acoustic curves don't have enough super singular points. But then something funny happens. You can still, it turns out they have tons of ordinary points. So in fact, you can prove that the Agusa curve, if you take the cubed Agusa curve and you look at it, so it has a ton of points. It has about q to the 3/2 ordinary points. And it's very funny, the other thing that's so funny, when you look at the Agusa curve level q, the right thing to do is to look at it over the field fq. So you take the field corresponding to the level, and then it turns out that this is true. The reason this is true is because it turns out that there are a lot of elliptic curves that over fq that have exactly q points. And those will give you a lot of points on the Agusa curve. And in fact, the number of elliptic curves of with exactly q points is some sort of Hurwitz Strasse number, which is about the square root of q. And then each of those square root of q curves gives you about q points on your Agusa curve. You get about q to the 3/2. And this will tell you that. So this implies that the fq bar, sorry, the fq banality of this Agusa curve is at least about q to the 1/2. So in particular, it's still tending to infinity as q goes to infinity. So, and that tells you that the FP bar banality of this is big. Not huge, but big. Yeah. So, and then, okay, then, I mean, then somehow you have to put these things together to do hybrid, to do the hybrid case. But to do this, it turns out, it's just a group theory problem. It turns out that, so using group theory, just by studying the properties of this group S, this big Poisson group, you can show that each hybrid curve dominates either a classical modular curve of big banality, or an Agusa curve, an Agusa of big banality. And so then you can use that last property of banality that I made at the beginning, that if something, one curve dominates another, then the banality of the bigger curve is bigger. So you can reduce case 3 to case 1 and case 2. So, okay, so I guess I'm pretty much out of time. So, well, if you want to hear about what this says about the uniform boundedness of torsion over function fields, I can explain that to you later. Okay, so anyway, thank you for your attention.
Any questions? Any more questions?
So what's the idea of your dilemma?
So the dilemma, so this is the dilemma where you start with it. You want to prove that the banality doesn't change too much when you base extend. So the situation is you're given a curve over a field K, and you're also given a map to P1 over K bar of low degree. So we'll assume that this has a low banality, and we want to prove that the banality over K is still pretty low. So you have a small degree. So now the task is to find a map from X to P1 defined over little k that also has low degree. So the first thing to do is, I'm probably not going to be able to give you the whole proof now, but the idea is you look at F together with its conjugates. So, okay, you can view F as being in the function field of k bar over F. So this is the function field over k bar. And you can look at its Galois conjugates.
And so you get a bunch of functions in here, all of low degree. And then you can first show that there's a finite list of these. You look at the field that they generate. And that will correspond to some, the field that they generate will correspond to some curve dominated by x. And this curve, because if you take all of the Galois conjugates, that curve, which I'll call y, is actually definable over k by a base criterion. You're essentially taking, just take Galois, you have a Galois action on the field generated by its conjugates. And now what you show is that y, you can bound the genus of y. So you bound, it is bounded in terms of some function of d. And then also the degree of this map, this one factors through here. And so this one has degree less than or equal to d. So now you use that because now, and now the way you use that x has a rational point, so y has a rational point. And using this together with the fact that the genus is bounded, you can bound the denality. You can bound the denality of y. And then the denality of x is at most whatever this could. You have a map now from here to a small degree. You just compose it with this one. You get a low degree. So, but unfortunately, this bound for the genus of y is not very good. At least I don't know how to make it very good. So that's where I'm losing a lot of. That's why this bound. That's why it goes from being huge to being big.
Any more questions?
No. What about the connections with the Unitarian boundaries of function fields? Could you say something briefly?
Okay, maybe I could just state what the result is. So it's so the result is so here's the function field version. Can you fix a field, a constant, this is going to be the constant field for the function field. And I might as well assume, the problem only becomes harder if you assume it's algebraically closed, so let me do that. So, and I'll assume that characteristic P. Actually, it could be any characteristic, it doesn't really matter. Yeah, so let me not assume that. So, any that'll be the constant field. And now I'm going to look at all extensions of K round bracket T of degree at most D. So given that degree, there exists an upper bound, n sub d, such that if I have a field k, a function field of bounded degree, so this is like looking at all possible number fields of degree d. So the k is the function field analog. And then my elliptic curve will be defined over this function field, so this is some elliptic curve. There's one extra thing you have to say here. You have to assume that the J invariant is not in K. The reason for this assumption is that, I want to bound the torsion of E defined over K, but if E were actually definable over this little k, then already you'd have all the torsion over little k. That would be infinite. So you need to assume, you need to have this assumption. So then the result is that the torsion is bounded by this constant that depends only on the degree. And this is actually a pretty straightforward consequence of these Gonality theorems. What you need, for this you need to bound the Gonality of x1 of n, and I guess it could be inclusive for if you're looking at bound p power torsion as well. So, it boils down to looking at points. In the classical case, what you want to do is you want to control points in here. You have an elliptic curve with a torsion point of large order, it gives you something here. And then this gets interpreted in terms of morphisms from the curve corresponding to k down to x on n.
Okay. Approximately, what is n sub d as a function of d, or is that hard to say?
You mean this theorem?
Is it better than Mirel's?
maybe a little bit better. I don't know. I'm not sure. I mean, for the, I guess, I mean, it depends on how good your Gonality bounds are. And as it stands, they're not so good, but then Morel's bounds are not so good either. I mean, if there's something exponential in D, it's sort of, I don't know, so.
Okay, so thanks. The next talk is at 11:30, and if you're coming to dinner, please sign up on the dinner list.